Hello, my spontaneous people. This is Shiny Boy here, and welcome to My Culture Mind. This is the show where I talk about anything in the world of modern culture, from music, movies, TV, and streaming, all that stuff. And today, I'm going to be talking about the passing of Akira Toriyama, also known as the creator of Dragon Ball, the Dragon Ball franchise, and like, you know, and other properties. And also, I'm going to be talking about Le Sserafim with their Smart music video, Max with which is another collaboration with Hyunjin from Le Sserafim as well. It's going to be a Le Sserafim love in this. Also, I'll be talking about Shogun, Bad Batch, and my experience watching Kung Fu Panda 4. So that is very gonna be exciting to talk about. But before I get started, if you are new to the podcast, thank you so much for listening today. This podcast is where is gonna be available wherever you can get your podcast. So without further ado, let's start off with Le Sserafim. Now, I've already discussed this in the previous episodes. I am a huge Le Sserafim fan. I am a fear not, is what we call ourselves, and I'm just so glad that they're gonna be performing a Coachella, which is going to be exciting to, well, a part of me wanted to go, but at the same time, I don't want to hang around with people. I don't know if I talked about this, or maybe I have. So I remember when going to an EXO concert, and I love EXO. Until this day, I still do. The concert itself was fun to watch. It's not the best experience, mostly because I got ground floor, and a lot of people, like, you know, oh, ground floor, that means you're closest to the stage. Yes, but also, it gets uncomfortable. There were no seats on ground floor, so I do suggest going and getting some seats. But since Coachella is a festival, and mostly it's standing up, and yes, you can bring seats, but it's hard to see. Hard to see sometimes on the stage, and because, like, everyone's, like, sweaty, and It's just not my vibe. So I'll probably just watch some fan cams from Coachella and whatnot, and I'll just see that. So yeah, I'm just gonna enjoy. I'm gonna be my own fan from afar. That's how I prefer to, enjoy them. But anyways, they released their music video for Smart, and I've already talked about the album, the Easy album, their third mini album, and how much I loved it. I think it's, like, you know, one of their, probably their best albums so far, because it's so different. And one of the songs was called Smart. Smart is that tropical house song, and, like, you know, sometimes would say, like, Afro reggae sort of vibes, and it's a very, and I'm just gonna say, it's booty shaking. It's booty shaking in some ways. So when I saw the performance for Smart, I was just in awe. And at first I said this was Sakura's song, and there are, she has, you know, more, like, you know, she has a lot of moments, like, you know, great moments in that dance. But this was Chaewon's song. I don't care what anyone says. This is Chaewon's song. Anyone could fight me on that. It was her fan cam, and that stage, that first stage performance for Smart, everyone was just like, I was like, oh my god. Like, her hips don't lie. And the music video, okay. When they announced when they were gonna do a music video, I was like, how are they going to make this a music video? And when I saw this, at first, I was just like, when I watched the music video, I was like, oh, this is a fun music video. But there were also, I'm like, oh, I wish there were more close-up shots of their face and all that. It felt like it was, like, you know, a last-minute sort of music video. And it was. It's a last-minute music video. Most music videos, like, for their B-sides, for example, Impurities was just, like, was a more of a dance choreography type of music video, but it was a great music video. I think Impurities is one, it's still my, like, you know, probably one of my favorite songs of all time from them. But I think for their music video itself, because it's so simple and it's just them dancing, but the cinematography is just fantastic. So I thought they're going that route, but it turns out that, like, you know, it wasn't like that. I think Impurities was the better music video. In terms of B-sides, trust me, I love Eve Syke and Bluebeard's Wife. I love that music video, but, like, I just love Impurity so much. But once again, let's go back to Smart, though. Smart, their music video was, it's simple, but it was also fun. It's also a fun music video to watch. And the background dancers. Oh my god. The boys too. I was looking at the boys and they have skirts. Those boys have skirts so they could shake their hips. And I was just like, go get them. I was just like, yes. You know what? We need to see more boys in skirts. In general, I think that should be a new norm, or maybe it is a new norm, and I haven't participated yet. Maybe I should. But yeah, I think that Smart, while it may not be my favorite music video, it's still one of my favorite songs from the album, and it's so catchy. And I love their school outfit, their schoolgirl outfits. Where it's just like, okay, why is it called Smart when they're wearing, like, you know, like, tropical stuff? And this really, like, you know, it was really, like, icing on the cake for that. Oh, Sakura's glasses and her ponytail. Oh, that was... And Yunjin's outfit for Smart, like, you know, with, like, you know, obviously her hair is fantastic. Kaza has bangs. Like, you know, she has bangs now, which is great. Unche, like, you know, with she's like, her dancing is just amazing. Like, you know, she's a great dancer. Her movements are smooth, and they both released a music video and a performance video. I need to see the performance video again, because I think I watched the music video a bit more than the performance. The choreography video, not the stage performance, but yeah, I just love this song. I just love this song, and I still love this music video, and I think that, and I think the dance, the dancing, just overall, it's a chef's kiss for me. It's a chef's kiss. Anyways, let's move on to Max's Stupid in Love. Now, I talked about this song. So Max Schneider, who made a collaboration with Ho Yunjin, from Le Sserafim, and he just released a music video. And once again, it's these music videos that I like, where it's like, it's not so deep into, like, story. It's just people singing and just having a good time. And that is what that music video is. This music video is just Max, like, you know, he just straight up in the beginning of his music video is just a description of, like, hey, I went to Seoul and I decided to shoot a music video with Ho Yunjin, and that's how it came to be. And you know what? I'm all for it. I'm all for it. This is just such a delight to see. And the fact that they released a performance for Kelly Clarkson, that is also amazing to watch. So the fact that, like, you know, Ho Yunjin, like, you know, appeared on Kelly Clarkson and Max as well. So it's just, I'm just glad for these two. And I'm just happy that that Ho Yunjin is getting more recognition. And the fact that they got a shout out, Kelly Clarkson made a shout out for Le Sserafim performing in Coachella, which is so, so sweet to see. That Kelly Clarkson advertised them performing on Coachella, so that is amazing to hear. So yeah, sweet music video. Go check it out. It's a catchy song, and yeah, I really love it. Anyways, let's move on to Shogun. Okay, now this show is, oh my god, it. Every time I keep watching this show, I always thought, like, oh, it couldn't get better than this. And it does. It gets better and better and better. So, let me do it like a quick summary. So, basically, the Unjin, or John Blackthorne, was told by Torunaga, Sanada's character, on, like, so how is he going to live? Like, you know, basically, he's... Without knowing, Blackthorne thought that he made a deal. Oh, I want my men. I want my ships. And then Mariko was just like, your service is to Torunaga. We need your services, and you can't refuse, or you will, like, you know, suffer some consequences. So, John had no choice but to teach the people, the Japanese people, how to use cannons. Or, like, you know, our military tactics. And so, while he hasn't been in battle, but he knows about cannons. And the fact that that his cannons from his ship are much better than Japanese cannons, he just shows them how to use it. And to see that power, of, like, you know, those cannons. And the Japanese were just like, holy crap, there is something to this. And but there's also the ethics of, like, this is not Japanese. This is not the way we do things. But I think that because of this, we get to see, like, the Japanese be like, okay, there's something to this. There's something more that we could offer, that the Anjin could offer, you know. Maybe there is more, maybe we are ignorant of, like, you know, how powerful, or maybe... how powerful these white people could do, you know. So, yeah. Once again, Torunaga being a badass. We only see him, like, in the beginning of the episode. But he was still a badass. Like, you know, being welcomed to the village and all that. Just being a badass and all that. Oh, I just want to say, Fuji, and I think this is, like, the best quote. This is the best quote I've heard. I think this was, like, from episode 3 or episode 4, but I think it was John Blackthorne that says, like, I only knew her half a day, but I will kill, or, like, kill anyone that hurts her. And I was just like, yo, that is, like, the single best description for her, because she just lost her baby and her husband just because he's trying to defend his lord. And now she's just like, and now, like, these people wanting to take the Japanese wanted to take Blackthorne's guns away, and Blackthorne just gives the guns to Fuji. And then the Japanese person is just like, okay, Fuji, give me those guns. And she just cocks the gun at them. And I was just like, ooh, do not piss off a widow. Oh, because she is pissed. Because, oh. At that moment, I was just like, oh, you better protect her with her life, man. Oh, she just at that moment. Just at that moment, she already became one of my favorite characters in the show. Man, that was so badass. It was so badass. I was like, oh, man. So basically, Blackthorne and Fuji are technically married. Legally married. But obviously, they're not in love and everything. But, like, you know, but legally, they are married. So, basically, Fuji is supposed to serve the Anjin. Or now it's just like Hatamoto. Like, you know, the Hatamoto. But the thing about Fuji, she's still grieving. And John didn't want her to, you know, to deal with that. Like, you know, why... why does he need a woman, like, you know, when she's still grieving and all that? Like, you know, when he wanted more his ships and his ship and his men. And Mariko was just like, we have have different ways of grieving. This is her way of grieving, by serving her lord in the best way possible, just to, like, you know, reclaim honor to her family, you know, and to be of service be of service. And the fact that she decided to give Black Thorn, John, to give John her father's swords as, like, you know, as a Hatamoto, like, you know, it'll be weird for him not to have swords. So she's just like, here's some swords, like, you know, don't, you know, I'll carry those guns for you, but here are these swords, and I think that, like, you know, you deserve that. And I don't know if he actually, like, you know, like, deserve, like, you know, those swords. I think it's just more of like, oh, like, he just needs some swords. Like, it'd be good because he's a Hatamoto and he doesn't have swords. But, and there's some Japanese people, it's like, oh, great, now the Anjin is having swords now. What a, like, you know, what a ridiculous joke. But it is, it's the crossing between two worlds that are, I love seeing. So, so yeah. Oh, and obviously, I think the highlight of this episode for me was definitely the conversation between Mariko and John. And it was a very tender, sweet moment where John decided to, you know, to go take a bath and, like, in the river or whatnot, or just, and then Mariko wanted to talk to him about it. I love how she just saw him naked at that moment. It was just like, oh, sorry, like, you know, and she blushed. Now, I'm not saying that she wasn't loyal to her late husband, but obviously her husband defended her and Torunaga so they could escape. But I don't think there was much love there. She's just doing her duty. And the fact that Mariko saw something in John, even though she translated her John's book and all that, she's still, like, you know, she still wants to see, like, who he is as a person by actually, like, you know, really, really having a deep conversation. This is where, like, this is the highlight for me. It's, like, because she is so used to whatever, like, you know, she's in her own world. And so is John, but John is more open. John is more, like, you know, like, a little more transparent than, like, obviously he has other things to hide. But he is more transparent in terms of saying how he feels, you know, and all that. And then Mariko asked him, where are you from? I'm from London. And what's it like? And, you know, and, like, and then there, what's life in London like? And then John just, like, you know, well, if you go, you know, like, you know, let's, like, he's trying to give her a scenario. Well, if you were to go on a night with me, like, as if, like, you know, it's to be honest, that's kind of smooth. That's kind of smooth. Well, if you were to go on, it's basically saying, well, if you were to go on a date with me, we would, like, you know, visit, like, you know, going to this bridge and all that. We're going to go for a walk, have a nice meal. I will take you to the Queen, that sort of thing. And, like, you know, it's a very sweet moment. And then she talked about, what I loved about John is he did not, because Mariko was about to say something about her past life in some ways. She was about to reveal something about her past that she was, like, you know, there's a bit of trauma in there. But John was just like, and I don't know the exact quote, what he said, but it's already damaged. You don't have to tell me. In some ways, like, you don't have to reveal. You don't have to reveal that. Like, you know, that's, you don't have to. If you need to protect yourself. And they talked about the Eightfold Fence, which is the title of the episode. This Eightfold Fence of, like, you know, just being in your safe space. If you need to be in your, and John was basically saying, like, if you need to be in your safe space, go do that. And then Mariko was just talking about freedom, like, you know, like, or, like, or basically what she saw in John as a free man. sort of way, you know, like, that in, because, like, you know, in the scenario of, like, you know, taking her on a date or a night out and doing all these things, and Monica was just like, oh, so this is what freedom is like. This is what freedom is. Because she didn't really know that. And it's a very sweet, tender moment. And what I loved about this is John didn't do it to simply, you know, flirt with Mariko. That wasn't it. He was just being himself. He was just being genuine. And while he was sleeping, Mariko just went to his quarters, like in his room, and just woke him up. And then, like, you know, I think this is the first time in her life that she decided to, you know, well, I'm just gonna straight up say, just straight up have sex with him, like, you know. but it was consensual in some ways, like, you know. To me, from the imagery of that, it seemed like a consensual thing to do for, like, you know, for her. She woke him up. And then he really did not stop. They were both in the moment. That's what I loved about it. And she was just like, she didn't say anything. She just took off her clothes. And then, like, she just kissed him. And then, like, and then she just grabbed, like, you know, his arm. And then just, like, you know, like, you know, feel her body and all that. Like, for me personally, like, that is for her. What I loved about it, this is Monica's, like, you know, taking charge of her life for the first time in her life. She's actually making her own decisions. That is, like, I want to be free, and I want to know what that freedom feels like, because she's just going by these rules. And the fact that she's able to do that for herself, and then, like, you know, and just to be one with a person that she genuinely cares about. And what I loved about, I loved how the next morning, and then John was just like, he's basically saying, thank you for the great night. And then she was just like, oh, of course. Like, you know, it's our dude, Fujisama thinks that, like, you know, this special person should be sent to your quarters. And he was confused at first, which is like, wait, what? I was like, and he was just like, oh, okay. Because Mariko can't really say, like, you know, is like, I had a great time too. But she was being playful with her words. And then John was just like, well, the service was great. And then Monica was just like, well, I'm glad she performed well, or that sort of thing. And I was just like, oh, I love this chemistry. I was just like, oh, this chemistry is great. And it was just such a nice moment to see. Like, you know, for yeah, it was just so nice to see them, like, you know, just blushing and all that. And then at the end of the episode was like, oh, this is going to be bad. Because Torunaga's son is kind of, like, impulsive. Torunaga's son is impulsive because he's just, like, he wants the approval of his father. But he feels left out because... It's Torunaga talks about, it's not about, like, your enemies are everywhere. You have friends nowhere. And, like, you know, I can't even trust, like, in, like, can't even trust his son and all that. So Torunaga's son decided to take charge and be like, because Ishido's men were visiting, and because they saw the cannons, they had no choice but to show how to use those cannons. And then Tory Nagasun decided, like, okay, we're going to show you these cannons. We're going to... He turned the cannons at Ishido's men and just boom! And just, like, just kill all of them. And I was just like, oh, it is war. As Mariko said, it is war. And they just end the episode. This is my favorite. Again, each episode, each week, I will keep saying, like, it's my favorite episode because it's so good. It's like, there's barely any action in this episode, and it's still good. At first, I went for Shogun just to see, like, okay, what kind of cool, you know, samurai action we're gonna get. But it's just the dialogue. The dialogue is so good. I am so glad that I chose to watch this show. I have no regrets whatsoever, and I can't wait to see more. Oh, man. I know I shouldn't rank these episodes, but 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10. Again, I'm gonna give a rating for these for the whole series of Shogun in the once the show is over, or at least the season is over. So we'll talk more about that later on. But yeah, what a great episode! What a fantastic episode! Anyways, let's move on to The Bad Batch. The Bad Batch, episodes 6 and 7. So, this week, we started off with two episodes. I think it's because it felt like, oh, we need to have two because it felt like an hour episode. Can they just release 1 hour episode? I don't think there's nothing wrong with that, but they released two episodes. But anyways, I think this is probably one of my favorite episodes because of we get to see the Bad Batch and how their role is in the fight of, like, you know, saving the clones and all that from Tantus. Like, the planet Tantus is where Hemlock keeps his experiments, and all the clones are, it basically repurposed them for, like, you know, for the Empire, you know, and all that. I like how they're like, oh, we don't need clones anymore, because it's expensive, and now they're, like, using clones. Now they keep talking about M count, so I wonder, that is the secret project, the M count, midichlorians. I keep saying midichlorians, but we get to see Rex again, and this time we get to see, Commander Wolf. Commander Wolf is back in this episode. So for those who do not know who Wolf is, he's also a clone, just like Gregor and Rex. And if you watched Rebels, they were together. Rex and Gregor and Wolf, they were together during Rebels, like, you know, in the fight against the Empire. But secretly, they were hiding on a secret planet and whatnot. But this is where we get to see Rex, Gregor and Wolf be together for the first time. So, but Gregor was still working for, Wolf was still working for the Empire. And then Rex was just like, hey, think about, like, you know, doing the right thing this time. Think about what feels right, you know, and that is, like, sort of the moral thing. We get to see, like this secret, like these spies, these clones that were repurposed. I think a lot of people are thinking about this too. I mean, I'm not the only one, but, like, the one who's so determined to capture Omega, I think Tech was found and was, because that was on Tantus as well. Am I wrong? Did Tech fall when he was in Tantus? No. I'm sorry. No. If that wasn't Tantus, that was a different planet, I think. I don't know. But anyways, I think Tech is that spy that was repurposed. And once Clone Force 99 or the Bad Batch, when they find out, I feel like if they find out that Tech was repurposed, I think, I think that is going to be another conundrum. He's going to be the new Crosshair. That's what I'm going to say. He is the new Crosshair of the show where, like, you know, where he's kind of like repurposed and he doesn't know what to do, or like he's being controlled by the Empire. So that's my theory. Overall, I think it's one of the better episodes of this season. This season so far, season 3 of The Bad Batch, it has been my favorite so far. Seasons 1 and 2, I still didn't know what's going on, but this time it was like, it's much darker, and it's more, well, even though the story revolves around clones, it doesn't feel like filler episodes. Each episode felt like it's a continuous thing. And that's what we get for our final season of The Bad Batch, really. This is all about the clones. What happened to the clones? What really happened before, like, you know, like, stormtroopers took over? And I really don't know why stormtroopers took over. I don't even know why they were there. But anyways, I have no other comments on that. I just really enjoyed this episode. But yeah. Anyways, let's move on to Kung Fu Panda 4. I'm going to keep this review short but sweet, because I really enjoyed this episode. This movie, sorry. This movie, it's a lot of fun. It is a fun movie. Viola Davis as the Chameleon was fantastic. These A-list celebrities doing Kung Fu Panda movies, I'm just like, Ian McShane, like, I forgot his last name, but returning as Tai Lung was awesome. Was this film necessary? No. Especially with other sequels, but then again, Kung Fu Panda 2 was great. Kung Fu Panda 3 was enjoyable, like, from what I remembered. It was an enjoyable movie, but not necessary. Same thing with Kung Fu Panda 4, it's not necessary. But it's a very nice, they have really cool fight scenes. I love how they handle Tai Lung as a character. Because in the first film, while he is a villain, he's also someone who wants to be acknowledged by his master, because if you don't remember from the first film, he thought he was supposed to be the dragon warrior. Like, all his life, he trained to be the dragon warrior, and he did not. And this time, being brought back from the afterlife, because the Chameleon was just like, I'm going to take your kung fu. And then, and the fact that he was rooting for Po. Well, first he wasn't sure about rooting for Poe. He was rooting for the Chameleon and whatnot. But still, the fact that Poe defeated the Chameleon, he gained that respect. The fact that Tai Lung acknowledged Poe as the Dragon Warrior, that is a great character arc for Tai Lung, you know. And then Poe trying to be a teacher. He wasn't sure about, like, giving up to be the Dragon Warrior. He didn't want to find a successor. He wanted to be the Dragon Warrior for the rest of his life, but he can't. And then, Master Shifu needs to let him know that, like, we don't live forever and you need a successor, you know? So he wasn't sure about finding, Poe wasn't sure about finding the next Dragon Warrior, and then he had come across this fox character. I forgot the fox character's name. Awkwafina, sure. Awkwafina's character. And while Awkwafina's character was basically, well, it's like more of an anti-hero in that respect. But I think that the relationship between her and Poe is a really good teacher-student relationship. And that is where I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, like, we already saw it. We all saw it coming in the theaters. But yeah, that new character is probably going to be the next Dragon Warrior. Maybe, maybe. We don't know, but like, but is a good runner-up, because Poe was just like, oh, I want this person to train in the temple, or like, you know, where, like, you know, the Furious Five is, and so she did her training there. I'm surprised Ki-Hui Kwan was in the film. I was surprised too. But I'm glad he was there. So yeah. I think the standout for me was Tenacious D performing Hit Me Baby One More Time during the credits, and I was like, oh, that is amazing. I'm just gonna listen to this song and then I'm gonna go home. But the fact that Jack Black, the fact that Tenacious D decided, like, okay, we're gonna hear Hit Me Baby One More Time for their promotional song, and that's amazing. So yeah, I had a good time with Kung Fu Panda 4. This franchise, while it may not be perfect, it's still an enjoyable franchise, really. I would say How to Train Your in terms of DreamWorks, How to Train Your Dragon is a perfect trilogy, and then Kung Fu Panda will be on the bottom, like, not the bottom, like, you know, under that, because it's just fun, and I think we need more films like that, and I think that's why a lot of celebrities like to do these movies, is because they're fun. They're fun, and I think the kids might like it, like, you know, or their kids might like it, so yeah, I really enjoyed it. Anyways, let's go on to the final topic, and I'm not gonna take that long, but we just have to acknowledge the passing of Akira Toriyama, who is the creator of Dragon Ball, and Dragon Ball, at least for Dragon Ball Z as well, and I've read the whole manga. Right now, I'm caught up with the manga. And I've watched almost all episodes of Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball Super. I even watched GT. Now, it's not Toriyama's work. But yeah, I still watch Dragon Ball, GT. But I just want to acknowledge, like, how important Akira Toriyama is for a lot of us, really. I think because of the character Goku, really inspired lots of people today who wanted, like, people who went to the gym. There are people who went to the gym because of the anime. Because of Dragon Ball Z, because the whole concept of, like, training, getting stronger, because of, we see a lot of superheroes, they're already muscular, but they didn't really go with a lot of training, and some of them do. Batman, like, you know, Batman did have a lot of training and all that, but there was something about Goku, and the concept of just getting stronger and stronger, and then training and training. That's why a lot of men and women, and non-binary, of course, went to the gym, because they want to be like their heroes, and Goku was one of them. Goku, Vegeta, these Saiyans who pride themselves on training and getting stronger is just such a, I think it's such a delight to see, because of, I think, for me, I like going to the gym. I like going to the gym, even if I don't go to the gym, I just felt like I just need to work out, like, or some sort of workout. For me, I do pull-ups, I do chin-ups, I do swimming, I do burpees, I do dancing and all that. I do a lot of calisthenics, but a lot of people, like, love to lift weights and all that. My fitness goal is usually calisthenics, And yeah, that's just my thing. I want to be stronger in terms of like, I just want to keep moving. That's basically my approach to it. But I also have a love for martial arts as well. I'm not a martial artist, but I do practice punches and kicks. Just like, you know, like I'm a huge Bruce Lee fan and all that. But Akira Toriyama created this character and created this world where training is important. Training is good for the body. Maybe not like. Now, some people might think this trope is like, you know, is too much. But it really did encourage a lot of men to be like, hey, stop sitting around. You may enjoy this, like, you know, you may enjoy this this manga and all that, but look at these characters. Look at these characters and see how much they train to become stronger. And while, like, you know, and I love how they become stronger and then they become defeated. And they were just like, okay, they just have to get stronger again. Now, this trope may seem excessive. And it may seem excessive, but it's also important, too. Yes, there's overtraining. Yes, there is. But, like, but also, I think, there are some concepts in Toriyama's work where rest is also important, or just to remind those, like, hey, it's also important to stay still and all that, to meditate and all that. So, once again, I think the Dragon Ball franchise is really just the whole concept of adventure. I love the concept of adventure, fighting. Meeting, going to different planets, you know, going to different universes, that sort of thing, time travel. But at the end of the day, for me, for what makes Dragon Ball Z so special is the encouragement of people just to be strong, and also the no shame of like, yes, you train, but also it's important to eat. It's a common shonen trope that, like, you know, the most muscular men, but they eat as much as they want. But I think that's also a good balance too. You can eat as much as you can, or as much as you need to, but also work out, just work out your body as well. So I think that's a nice trope to see. So overall, he's going to be missed. I think this announcement was made in Japan, like, in March. Early March. But it was announced in the U.S., like, you know, later on. So, it's just... But, yeah, a lot of men in their 30s. A lot of men in their 40s and so on. They're just, like, devastated. Like, this was the man who created our childhood. Like, you know, I remember watching Dragon Ball on Toonami. And, I remember watching it on the Toonami website as well, that they had episodes there as well, when I wasn't able to, when I did not, when we no longer have cable, or maybe we probably have cable, but I was just so excited to watch a lot more episodes, and the fact that it comes out, and just like the, and the music, and Sean Schimmel as Goku, it's such a iconic franchise, and he will be missed, so... Thank you, Akira Toriyama. Thank you so much for all the work that you've done. So thank you so much. Anyways, that is it for today. It was a really packed episode today. But that is it for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you are new to the podcast, thank you so much for listening today. Share this podcast to anyone you know. It really means a lot. It really helps a lot. And until next time, so long, farewell, take care, bye-bye.